tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, you vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be. In the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One more door for signal token, whistle up the marching tune. For your pike upon your shoulder, by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon. With your pike upon your shoulder, by the rising of the moon. Out from many a mud walled cabin eyes, we're watching through the night. Many a manly chest was throbbing for the blessed warning light. Along the valleys like the man she's lonely croon, and the thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon.
Greetings from the Northwest homeland, comrades. It's April 1st, 2010. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest.
Rising of the moon, there beside the singing river, the dark mass of men were seen, far above their shining weapons on their own beloved green. Death to every foe and traitor, forward strike the marching tune. And hurrah, my voice for freedom, is the rising of the moon.
First, the obvious question. No, this is not going to be a special April Fool's Day of Radio Free Northwest. I think the first part of last week's broadcast was quite foolish enough, thank you. I've gotten several emails from a number of you asking me to comment on the recent federal raids against alleged militia members in the Midwest, which took place over the weekend, including a number who were arrested at a funeral. I don't know the people involved personally, I've never heard of them, and all I know about that particular series of events is what I read in the mainstream media, which is, of course, a highly suspect source. For those reasons, I would like to hold off commenting on this until next week, although I've already been asked to go on the Jim Giles Radio Free Mississippi show to discuss this. That hasn't been firmed up yet, and so I don't know when or if I will be appearing there, but in any case, I'll probably have something to say about that next week when more details are known. Okay, the first email this week comes from Tom in California. Hi, Harold. Just between us, I like the radio broadcasts. If this is not too late, I have a couple of subjects that you might want to address. Why not drop down into Northern California? It is a very conservative, white area and mountainous. With the gold reserves, water, timber, agriculture, so forth, it would be a very valuable part of the Northwest Republic. Which way will Utah go when America starts to break up and we make our intentions known? I know that they would prefer to be in their own sovereign country, but they might see us as a very viable option. This may be a topic to stir some good conversation and get more people to look outside the box. It is, of course, no coincidence that Comrade Tom happens to live in Northern California. We get this a lot, and we've been getting it ever since the publication of the first Northwest novels. People from Northern California, Alaska, Utah, Colorado, North and South Dakota often come to me suggesting that we include their home states in the projected boundaries of the Northwest American Republic, basically so they don't have to move. I've even had people try to persuade me to include San Francisco as part of the Northwest homeland so people living there don't have to move. Now, don't get me wrong, I get why these people want me to do this. Packing everything you own and moving stakes is an incredible hassle. Believe me, I get it. I do. God knows I should. I've done it myself often enough. I have nothing at all against these people who are trying to schmooze me into relieving them of the moral responsibility to pack that moving van, and I don't blame them for trying, not at all. But remember the whole theory behind what we're trying to do here, which is to concentrate our numbers in a given area to where we can actually form communities, real people living in the real world within half an hour's drive of each other, and begin functioning in the real world as opposed to the internet, and also to reduce the whole problem of white racial survival and revolution to manageable proportions. Remember, when the excrement impacts on the revolving blades, we want to be fighting a colonial war, struggling for the independence of a far-flung outpost of empire removed from the capital and the centers of wealth and power, a backwater that the wealthy Jews and multinational corporate executives of Washington and New York and Houston really won't be all that upset about giving up if it has to be done to preserve their power and their profits. We need land to grow into as a nation, true, but on the other hand, we have to keep this practical and we mustn't get too greedy. There are enough racially conscious whites so that if, I say if, we can ever get our act together, lay aside all our petty differences, stop listening to the goat-dancing idiots from the 1990s who hang around V-bulletin boards and still claim to lead us, and finally unite behind the Northwest Migration, as every ounce of remaining common sense dictates that we should. If we can ever do those things, then we could easily concentrate 10 or 20,000 of us at least in 3.5 states. That will give us the basis for serious missionary work among the locals, so we can finally begin to draw our personnel not from the movement, but directly from the white community. That is a major strategic goal. We could be doing that now, of course, except that nobody in the white population of the Northwest knows that we are here. Our websites are stuck on a few hundred hits per day, and we haven't yet figured out how to get any responsible establishment publicity without somebody getting killed and without standing on a street corner holding a sign and wearing a costume and making fools out of ourselves. If that ever changes, we'll be on our way. But we do still have to reduce the problem to manageable proportions. The original proposed white homeland consisted of a core territory of 3 complete Northwest American states, Idaho, Oregon, and Washington. We have since added western Montana, largely because of the intensity and dedication of one single female comrade who is forming her own primary settlement area in Kalispell. But at some point, guys, we've got to draw the line. At various times in the past, other parts of the Northwest have been suggested as potentially forming part of the homeland. These include the northern third of California, above Redding, the state of Wyoming, the state of Alaska, and the present Canadian provinces of British Columbia and Alberta. Those Canadian provinces I would especially like to include in the Northwest Republic when the time comes, but they'll be the responsibility of Northwest Front Canada. There is a half-assed independence movement in Alaska, but it's kosher conservative and capitalist in nature, and so it's useless as a vehicle for racial survival. There is also a separatist movement with a distinct racial tinge to it that already exists in western Canada, but they don't seem to have gotten very far with it. Neither have the French in Quebec, as far as that goes. The fact is that no separatist movement that attempts to use liberal democracy will ever get very far. Remember, the purpose of democracy is to prevent change. Now, for the entire 3.5-state settlement area, we are looking at a total of almost 300,000 square miles. That's a lot of territory to cover, as I can tell you just from the one road trip we did to Idaho a few weeks ago. We talk about reducing the scale of the problem, but let me tell you, the Northwest homeland is a big-ass place, and it's going to be hard for us to move around in it, given our limited resources, when even a single tank of gas is a major financial project. Imagine how it would be if we started to include these other areas and had to take road trips to Salt Lake City and Cheyenne or San Francisco, just because some of our people don't want to exert the necessary effort of will to pack the moving van. The whole purpose of reducing our operational area to something manageable would be defeated. Just as we need communities of racially conscious white people living within half an hour's drive of one another, we need every place in the homeland to be within a long day's drive max. Now, when the balloon finally goes up, I personally would like to glom onto as much territory as possible. If we're in some kind of situation whereby we can acquire Northern California and Utah and Wyoming or whatever, great. But we don't know exactly how and when and under what circumstances the inevitable breakup of the United States is going to occur. Until we have a little more information in that area, the Northwest Front has to keep to the present 3.5 states. God knows they're going to be hard enough to work with on their own. Okay, moving on to our next email here. Dear HAC, there was a news story about a week ago about a German family that was granted asylum here in the U.S. so they could homeschool their children, which is illegal in Germany. I was thinking that would be a good topic for Radio Free Northwest, how the so-called educational system in this country has become so utterly dangerous, physically and developmentally, for white children, how schools intentionally distort and alienate white kids from their heritage, how the deluge of minority children into formerly white and thus successful school districts causes a systematic destruction and inevitable exodus from the area in question. And finally, where this will all lead. Will homeschooling be the only option for white families in the coming future? Will the U.S. do what Europe does and simply take children by force and throw them into these animal factories? Music-wise, I don't know how you are on playing anything more contemporary, or, I hate to say mainstream, for the music break, potential lawsuits and all that, but Land of Confusion by Genesis certainly seems appropriate for the times. Looking forward to how it turns out. 14 words, Chris from Detroit. Well, thanks for the email, Chris. First off, this one did kind of slip through the cracks, and I haven't had time to check out that Genesis cut yet, which I don't recall from back in the day, but I will certainly do so before next week, if you will remind me. And while I'm on that subject, folks, if I ever do promise to do something for you, or send you something, or read something, and it seems like I've forgotten it, I probably have. So send me a reminder. I'm not being intentionally rude. It's just that work is starting to pile up, which is a good thing, and I am now spending about 10 to 12 hours a day seated behind this computer, and sometimes I don't organize my time as well as I should. So don't be reluctant to riot and harass my ass when I promise you something and I don't do it immediately. Chris, make sure you send me an email or two reminding me to check out that Genesis number, and if it doesn't sound too negroid or lefty or degenerate, I'll play it. It's true, I probably don't play that much contemporary music, although there are a few notable exceptions like Dagger and Saga and Steve Earle, but that's frankly because most contemporary music sucks, and that's another subject which we won't get into now. Yes, I'm familiar with the case of that German couple and their homeschooled child, and God knows I'm familiar with the horrors of the American educational system. I myself became a white nationalist and eventually a national socialist because I was thrown into an integrated high school at the age of 15, and that's where most of us get our first dose of racial reality these days. I think that's something that speaks for itself. Chris, let me explain kind of the philosophy behind these podcasts here. This is going to be a little repetitious. I think I've covered this before, but you folks need to get used to a fair degree of repetition on these things because repetition is necessary to make sure that certain concepts and ideas sink in. That's just how it is. I have certain points I have to drive home here, and you're going to be hearing them a lot. Now, for many years, what passes for a white resistance movement in America has consisted almost completely of news commentary, the pablum of the right wing. It's always been, oh, look at this, look at what they're doing to us now, oh, it's just so horrible, isn't it awful what they're doing now, please send me money so I can keep on telling you how horrible it all is. Now, for 60 years, out of hundreds of right-wing and racial groups and personalities, it's been all news commentary, whining and complaining, and there's been virtually nothing at all about the solution to any of this. Why not? Because we all know what the solution is, and we are terrified to the point of shitting in our pants to speak of it. That is one of the things I hope to accomplish with my Northwest novels. I can't make white people brave again or give them the moral courage of our ancestors. They have to find that within themselves. But I want to at least remove the taboo on thinking and speaking about solutions to our racial and political problems that will actually bring about change. Real change you can believe in, pardon the expression. Now, I've only been able to work up to a full hour on this podcast once or twice so far. Usually, my aging and weakened vocal cords and larynx flame out at about 45 minutes. I hope with practice to increase that time. If I so chose, I could spend that 45 minutes every week ranting and raving about Obongo and the Jews who are running him, like Rahm Emanuel, David Axelrod, and Cass Sunstein. I could rant and rave about the economy, or unemployment, or the foreclosure crisis, or the banks, or the Federal Reserve, or Israel, so forth and so on. And in the long run, there would be no difference between me and the Northwest Front and, say, WorldNet Daily or Newsmax.com. Oops, there I go, naming names again. Sorry, force of habit. I could spend all my time doing what all the other groups and spokesholes and personalities do, rabbiting on and on and on about the problem and uttering not one whisper about the solution or about the terrible flaws in our own character which prevent us from taking that solution. But at some point, somebody has to talk about these things out loud. We at the Northwest Front and we in the Northwest Migration Movement have to be different. If for no other reason than we're so small and so destitute that we can't possibly compete with some of these larger groups and websites when it comes to news commentary. If I'm going to somehow obtain enough of a market share, pardon the expression, in order to place the Northwest Front and the Northwest Migration at the head, first of the movement and then of the white community as a whole, then I have to start out by being different. I am going to have to talk primarily about the two topics which up until now we have avoided like the plague: solutions and character. I'm not trying to avoid the question about homeschooling, Chris. Obviously, homeschooling is something that is very necessary for young white children in order to keep them from becoming completely corrupted by this rotten world in which we're forced to live and raise them. But I am saying that you can probably get all kinds of fascinating and pertinent commentary on this subject off the other racial and conservative sites and V-Bulletin boards, and it would say all that could be said much better than I could and at much greater length. That doesn't mean I won't occasionally go off on long anti-Obongo or anti-Jew raves, believe me. I will find the time on more than one occasion to work some of those in, if for no other reason than they're just plain fun. Okay, time for the first music break. Some of you out there, especially the ladies, may remember the movie Back to Titanic and the big Irish dance scene in the third-class steerage between Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet. This is Gaelic Storm. Back to the emails now with questions and suggested discussion topics. Dear HAC, regarding last week's Radio Free Northwest podcast, if you can keep up this kind of fever-pitched rhetoric, I have no doubt that the NF can break into the consciousness of the mainstream. Well, I hope so. Check out the number of views the RFNs have received on YouTube now. Apparently, Stormfront and VNN hobbyists are deigning to look at them. for a while anyway. I looked at the YouTube Insight app, which analyzes nearly every aspect of viewers and their behavior, and I see that when written messages appear on the screen, viewership falls off dramatically, and when violence and explosions appear, viewership spikes just as dramatically. This is pathetic, but considering the average age of YouTube users and the intense dumbing down they've been subjected to, it's a miracle that so many choose to watch at all. We're on to something now, and intense advertisement is the key. Even Jim Giles admitted he would come home if he could conserve his material possessions in the process. I think the vast majority of whites would join us, but they are locked into the false covenant that they believe still exists between themselves and their bankster creditors. The banksters broke the covenant, and white people are not morally or legally bound to complete any contractual obligations that existed at the time of signing. Our forefathers crossed the Atlantic, leaving massive debts to a vile, corrupt banking system, and their grandchildren crossed the plains, leaving massive debts to the same system that followed them to the New World. I believe the only times white people on this continent were ever truly free was during the interregnum between frontier and civilization, when barter and precious metal-backed currency were the preferred trade medium. I'd like to suggest a future RFN segment along those lines, a call to those in debt up to their eyeballs to simply walk away without remorse and start anew in the Northwest. Supplying new identities and social security numbers is business as usual for illegal Mexicans, so I can't imagine that one of us can't figure it out. I know you want to remain strictly legal for as long as possible, but I fear it will hobble us to do so. Perhaps it's best if you know nothing of this, so you could just send my contact info to people who would be outraged at my behavior and wish to correct me. Okay, I'm going to redact this comrade's name just in case, because his email does contain a passing reference to illegal activity. I don't think any of you who have read my Northwest novels could ever accuse me of being averse to discussing forbidden topics, but we have to assume that these podcasts are being monitored by all the usual suspects. I am not quite sure how a suggestion that white people should do what millions of Mexicans do every day could be construed or ginned up into some kind of wicked racist conspiracy. But I'm sure our friends in the silk suits can think of something if they're so inclined. You're quite correct, comrade. We have to convey somehow to millions of white people the concept of the Pacific Northwest as a refuge and a homeland, a place where one can go to, quite frankly, flee from all the rubbish they're facing back in New York and Georgia and Texas and California. A lot of times people who advocate Northwest migration get this response from people, "I ain't moving nowhere, Harold. I'm staying right here in Hogwaller, Arkansas, where my daddy and his daddy and his daddy before him was born and raised. We gotta stand and fight." Okay, great. More power to you. I'm all for that. But let's actually see some of this standing and fighting. Oh, and by the way, sitting behind a computer keyboard with a can of beer and posting silly gibberish to VNN doesn't count as standing and fighting. Ah, there's the rub. Nobody is standing and fighting. They're hunkering down and hiding in their homes, or else maybe running off into the piney woods and hiding in a double-wide mobile home with a closet full of guns, which I very much doubt will ever fire a single shot at the racial enemy. This talk about standing and fighting for all of America is basically just another excuse to avoid packing the moving van. Another excuse to do nothing. Hot damn, us white boys are good at that. Finding some logical, rational, and convincing reason to do nothing. Just like leaderless resistance. Great idea in theory, except in practice, it's turned out to be all leaderless and no resistance. And that's not Louis Beam's fault. That's all on us. Lone wolf is the same way. It's all lone and no wolf. Just another excuse to avoid meeting other white nationalists in a Starbucks and to avoid packing that moving van for the Northwest. Contrary to popular belief, there is nothing at all dishonorable about fleeing from overwhelming force and tyranny. That has been done time and again by our people down through history, the Welsh and the Afrikaners, and, of course, many of the early settlers who fled from oppression of various kinds in Europe and came to this country from across the sea. The Pilgrims themselves were fleeing from oppression in England, you may recall. Remember the Swamp Fox during the Revolutionary War in South Carolina, who fought and ran away so he could fight another day, going over the top to charge the machine guns head-on like both sides did at Verdun and the Battle of the Somme during World War I is just stupid. Relocating out of bad situations is as Aryan as apple pie, so to speak. There is no honor or common sense in continuing to live in a place where you're surrounded by muds and most likely in physical danger of being victimized because of the color of your skin. Why do so many of you keep on doing it? It's just plain dumb. Yeah, packing a moving van involves physical effort, but Jesus, are you all really that lazy? We have to let white people know that there is a home and a refuge for them here. And then the party has to make that so by giving new migrants everything we can in the way of assistance and support, which is one reason why I need to get everybody paying dues. You can't run a relocation agency, among other things, without funds. We are also going to be required to pump up a major propaganda effort on our part, something we can't really do on just a few hundred hits a day on our websites. This major effort will have to come when somehow or other we break out of the bubble. When we can make white people aware of the fact that we are here, and when tens of thousands of people begin to actually read and hear and eventually to see on video what we have to say. We're doing all we can. We have a total of 4 official websites and blogs now, 5 if you count the Homeland blog on the northwestfront.org, and pretty soon we'll have another official Northwest Front site coming online. I've seen the beta version of this new site from the webmaster, and I tell you folks, this one's going to knock your socks off. Plus, courtesy of Colonel House, we've got all 4 Northwest novels and a lot of other great stuff for free download from the White Nationalist PDF site. So it's not for lack of our trying on the internet. Where we're falling down is getting those URLs in front of the people who need to see them and persuading them to go there. When we reach the point where we have a much wider audience than we do now, an audience comprised mostly of new people who have never had any exposure before to white racial views of any kind other than what they see on television and in the movies, then we'll have to change a lot of the orientation and direction of much of our propaganda. There will have to be sections of our websites and our printed literature that deal with basic racial and ideological issues. Above all, teaching our people about the all-important Jewish question. And yes, one of the incentives we will have to hold out to our people is the promise of a genuinely new and fresh start, free from debt and free from all of the 10 tons of crap that politically correct democracy loads onto white people's backs. Somehow or other, we're going to have to strike a chord in our people that hasn't been struck for a long time. We're going to have to persuade them to do what hundreds of thousands of our ancestors did 150 years ago, pack all their stuff into a Conestoga wagon, or in this case a U-Haul truck, and strike out on the Oregon Trail into the unknown. Okay, some people are methodical and motivated and personally organized in their lives, so for them it doesn't have to be this way. Now those people will be really glad to help in any way we can. Anybody can have a job and a house waiting for them once they get here if they devote a little effort to it. And this is an important proviso, if they haven't totally screwed the pooch where they are, and they've managed to acquire skills and assets to bring with them to the homeland. But let's face it, how many white people these days are like that? This politically correct society maims, mangles, and destroys the lives of white people, especially white males. A lot of the people we have showing up here will be just as the comrade who mailed me described them, people who are, in fact, more or less fleeing from the horror of diversity and depression combined, fleeing from the collection agencies and the ex-wife's attorney, fleeing from the corrupt civil courts, fleeing from the violence and the squalor of the tenements where they are forced to live in racially mixed neighborhoods, fleeing from 100 different situations in their lives which have become absolutely intolerable. Some of these people will be those whom I think may be best described as the T-shirt youth, the young men with nothing but the T-shirts on their backs. We get a lot of those, especially when there's a bunkhouse and a refrigerator full of beer going. Some of the new migrants will be out-and-out economic refugees, fleeing from bill collectors and lawsuits and bankruptcies and court-ordered alimony and civil judgment payments. And we will need to provide such migrants with help to make sure that they're not further harassed and annoyed once they reach the homeland, so that they can truly start over. Some will be ideologically and racially motivated, of course, and those will be the cream of the crop. But whatever their motivation, we have to find some way to get all of these people to actually pack that moving van and come here so that we can relearn the art of living in communities and get on with the job at hand of securing the existence of our people and a future for white children. Okay, time for another music break. A lot of people have said they like the southern instrumental and folk and bluegrass I've been putting on here, so here's an old-timey number from Ralph Stanley again. This is called Little Maggie.
Well, you understand, Little Maggie, with a jam glass in her hand, she's drinking away. Had a 44 around her and a banjo on her knee. racing down to the station, cash in my hand. I'm going away, leave you. I'm going to some far distant land.
The next email is a long one, and it comes from Larry in Las Vegas. Now, Larry sent in a whole raft of questions. Greetings, Mr. Covington. My name is Larry. I have been listening to your podcasts, and I've read your varied internet posts, and I agree with nearly all you say with regard to the devolution of white people, or, as I like to say, European Americans. Why can't we hyphenate as well? That's a minor question. I have a series of questions regarding what you propose. The last time there was a serious migration in this country, it was done by the Mormons in the middle of the 19th century, and they did it under much the same circumstances as we would be facing. They faced the elements and persecution. We, however, have modern conveniences and established infrastructure and homes to go to. They did not. With this said, my questions are as follows. Question number one, do you propose to begin the migration now? Well, yes, Larry, we've already begun the migration, nowhere near what it should be in terms of numbers, but you have to bear in mind that most Northwest migrants are of what we refer to as the organic variety, in other words, just normal people who have decided to up stakes and get the hell out of California or Florida or wherever they're living, surrounded by mud people, and come here. They use all the usual conservative code words, of course, like good schools and clean air and a sense of community. In other words, they're referring to all of the things that diversity and multiculturalism destroys. They would cut off their own ghoulies rather than admit that they are coming to the Northwest for any overtly racial reason, but bring up the subject of Mexicans and see how they react. Sometimes I think we have about half the white population of California living up here. Question number two, how will you govern and who will govern this new nation? I have done some exploring around the so-called movement. What a bunch of dunces. I have found only one group that has people, and they have only a few who know what and how to run a government and structure. Well, Larry, what I'd like you to do is to go to our website at www.northwestfront.org, and along with all the other things on there, I would like you to check out the draft copy of the Constitution of the Northwest Republic. This is a genuine, honest-to-God constitution put together by an actual committee of serious adults. You may not like some of the provisions, but like it or not, it is a bona fide and workable attempt to provide an alternative form of government which would be suitable to a white nation-state. Read that draft, and you will find the answer to many of your questions there. Question number three, where will you get the experienced white people to run a government that will be able to do what you envision when many white nationalists today are felons, can't keep a job, are experts only at video games, can't balance a checkbook, and are the biggest cowards to boot? Has the cancer already advanced to the point where it may be every man for himself? Many of us who consider ourselves true national socialists, who have worked, have means, and would like to invest in a real nationalist opportunity, are left with nothing. Thus, we support comrades in Europe who do much more with far less, given the legal restrictions they face. They get elected to office without a First Amendment. Our nationalists are felons and urinate in public. Our nationalists have no understanding of culture, most likely have never heard a Wagner opera, but consider profanity-laden screaming as cultural music. Actually, Larry, that's one of the reasons I include the musical sections on these podcasts. I will admit that most Americans are rather limited in their musical education, and I hope to improve that. Now, Larry, I mentioned briefly this phenomenon in last week's podcast, and I've spoken about it before. This is what I refer to as our character issue, and I have spent the past 30 years going on and on and on about it. And for my trouble, I've been subjected to 30 years of abuse, insult, slander, and vilification. If you want to email me privately, I'll be happy to send you some copies of my old articles and blogs on the subject, but as to here and now, let me say this. Larry, I wish I could tell you that you were wrong. Unfortunately, you're not wrong, but neither are you completely correct. There are decent white nationalists, national socialists, and racial libertarians around. Many more of them than there were a few years ago. I know because they're beginning to gravitate to the Northwest Migration and the Northwest Front. We are getting a lot of people who spent years supporting other groups like the National Alliance when Dr. Pierce was still alive, and they're coming around to the NF now, and they like what they see. True, like everything else in our movement, it's still entirely too much internet and way too few boots on the ground. But frankly, I think I can say right now that we have more real physical people actually doing things than almost anybody else you would care to name. Like everything else in our movement, it is a slow, slow, deadly slow process, slow as molasses in wintertime. Getting white people to do anything, even meet someone in a restaurant or get behind the wheel of a car and do some long-distance driving, is like pulling teeth. But I can tell you without hesitation that there is, in fact, a notable improvement in the character and the quality and the moral fiber of the people who are coming to our cause. At least here in the Northwest, there is. As to where we will find the experienced white people to run a government, you seem to think that I have some idea that the government of the Northwest is going to be taken over by a bunch of drunken skinheads who lay around the state capitol drinking beer like it was a clubhouse or something. But that's not how it's going to happen. Any group of men and women who are capable of planning and executing a successful revolution will, almost by definition, also possess at least some of the necessary skills to run a government in a modern technological state. I also believe that by the time revolution becomes a reality, there will be white people who, while not white revolutionaries themselves, will be willing to step forward and help build a new nation, because it will have become obvious that the old order is doomed, and quite simply, they will want to be on the winning side. Okay, we'll go for music break number 3 here. Now, so far on this podcast, we've had one Irish selection and one Southern folk or hillbilly selection. Yet these two are very similar in provenance since they're both descended from a common ancestor, the pipe tunes and songs of the British Isles, specifically Ireland and Scotland. Most early Southern settlers were what's referred to as Scotch-Irish, which means they were originally Protestant colonists of Northern Ireland, who were brought over from Lowland Scotland in the 17th century by the British in order to supplant the native Gaelic Catholics. But the pickings were so slim in Ulster during the 18th century that many of them emigrated to America after spending only a generation or two in Ireland. My own ancestors, for example, came from the area around Coleraine in County Derry, if you're a Catholic, or County Londonderry, if you're a Protestant. When I was in Ireland, I lived in the Republic, and so I fell into the habit of calling it Derry because that's what everybody around me called it. But yes, I still recognize that over there, this is one of those hysterically sensitive issues over which men plant bombs in one another's cars. That's the Irish for you. They'll kill a white man because he uses the wrong prayer book, but they'll let the Nigerians take over Moore Street for fear of being called racist. Anyway, one of the better efforts I've heard to combine, or if you will, reunite the two Irish musical traditions, is this one by American country rocker Steve Earle. It's called Galway Girl.
I took a stroll on the old one walk of the day. I met a little girl and we stopped to talk a fine soft day. And I asked her friend, what's a fella to do? 'Cause her hair's black and her eyes are blue. And I knew right then I'd be taking a whirl around a salt-hill prom with a Galway girl. Something I broken heart a ticket home. And I ask you now, tell me what would you do? World, boys, I ain't never seen nothing like a Galway girl.
By the way, in the song, he mentions meeting his Galway girl on the Salt Hill Prom. If you ever get over there, make sure you check out that Salt Hill Promenade. The panoramic view over Galway Bay is one of the most breathtaking in all of Ireland. Yes, Lord, remember it well. Okay, back to the questions of Larry from Las Vegas. Question number 4. I consider myself a national socialist. I've seen firsthand the failures of capitalism and the failures of the American plutocratic system. Marxism is also contrary to human nature. Do you propose a national socialist government? If so, I see this as difficult, given 99% of so-called American Nazis have no clue of what real national socialism is, as to economic and other issues. All they want to do is yell and scream nigger and kike, and most have no concept as to character and turn on each other faster than a Jew can count pennies. It seems to me you are attempting to build a new nation for people that don't exist any longer, and at best are attempting to herd cats. Well, Larry, again, I refer you and others who have questions of this nature to the Northwest Constitution, which you will find on the web at www.northwestfront.org. I also sent you a copy of the White Book, which contains the Northwest Republic's Constitution, as an appendix. You need to sit down and study it. You will find some National Socialist aspects in the Constitution, yes, just as you'll find National Socialist programs referred to in my novels, specifically The Hill of the Ravens, which is set in the future Northwest American Republic after the War of Independence. Some of the Constitution also clearly derives from the United States Constitution, and specifically corrects some of the errors and problems which have appeared with that document in practice over the past 223 years. The Northwest Constitution clearly propounds a society based on free enterprise, but also on social duty. The trick here is to keep free enterprise, but effectively keep out capitalism. Remember, capitalism is just as racially poisonous to the white man as Marxism is. It is the capitalists who brought the Mexicans and other illegals here and who will be helping Barack Obama and his Jewish controllers keep them here throughout the upcoming amnesty in order to provide cheap labor and drive white wages and employment down. Question number 5. Do you plan on an internal society much like North Korea, or do you plan on openly seeking to enter the world stage and engage in world commerce? It should be noted that National Socialist Germany was a major exporter in world trade. Yes, it was. Well, Larry, realistically, we in the Northwest Republic are probably going to be pretty isolated in the first few years after independence, although in view of the chaos that will be going on in the rest of the world, that may well be a good thing. If you mean, do I plan to have everybody marching around in what looks like cheerleader outfits on football fields with huge pictures of me everywhere? No, in point of fact, while we're on that subject, let me quickly state something for posterity here. For various reasons I won't get into here, I most likely won't be around myself to see the day of victory, but if I am, and I do end up being fearless leader in the new republic, one of my first orders will be no pictures or statues of myself, or of anyone still living. After I'm dead, fine, you guys can make an HAC cult if you like, although frankly it would be a pretty damn boring cult. But one of our rules needs to be nobody gets elevated into the pantheon of heroes of the revolution, so to speak, until he's safely dead and we know for sure he can't screw up, and we can make sure that he doesn't have any weird skeletons that can come dancing out of his closet. Now, that includes me. I sure as hell hope to God that in my final years I won't go gaga like certain other deceased fearless leaders did, start engaging in weird photography habits or other eccentricities, but you never know. Although I can think of a couple of our present dead hero figures in the movement who ain't going in any pantheon I ever have charge of, because they do have some damn nasty skeletons in their closet, even if we choose to ignore them. We really don't want to be erecting statues or naming streets in the Republic after some of these old farts. Sorry, I'm wandering again. I really shouldn't ad-lib these things. As to trade, most likely during the first few years, or maybe the first few decades of the Republic, will be locked down by the kind of vicious economic sanctions that democracy loves to impose on countries and governments they don't like. I lived with those in Rhodesia, and I can tell you that they are annoying, but no more. We always managed to get hold of anything imported we really needed, and we also managed to manufacture what we couldn't import. This is one reason I've always insisted that the homeland has to be large enough to contain all the necessary resources for food and energy and self-defense. And above all, we must have a coastline with deep water ports for the time when the sanctions are lifted and we can begin trading with the world, or rather with what's left of the white world. Question number 6. The most pressing issue is how and when do you plan on establishing this new nation, and how can you ask people to simply move and wait? You speak of bold actions. Why not simply gain your numbers and declare the nation? A white nation will have to fight for itself one way or the other. A white nation will not be allowed to exist. You know this from Rhodesia. You haven't read the Northwest novels, have you, Larry? Look, folks, I'd like to ask something of all of you, and that is that if you have not actually read the 4 Northwest Independence novels, that you do so before you send in your questions and comments to this program or email me or whatever. This isn't because I'm an author fishing for more readers or trying to sell you books. The Northwest novels are available for free to anyone who wants them. They can be downloaded from http://wn-pdfs.tk if you don't mind reading a long book on a computer screen, or you can download them and print them out if you like so that you can read a hard copy. I'm asking this of you because those books contain information that explains everything, or almost everything, and answers your questions before they're asked. It is really very difficult for me to discuss these things with people who haven't read the novels. We need to be on the same page, if you'll pardon the pun. Question number 7. Will the new nation have a race code along with the lines of the Nuremberg laws? What about whites with salt and pepper in the bloodline? What if a white brings his non-Aryan spouse? No, this is not me. This makes me ill. Our bloodlines are being bred out. Check the Northwest Constitution, Larry. It's all at www.northwestfront.org. Folks, I understand that I'm going to be dealing with the same objections over and over and over again from now right on up until the day that tricolor flag first goes up at Longview or wherever it goes up. Right up until the day when we win the Northwest Republic and regain our freedom, there will be white men who are raising fatuous objections, giving me quibbles, giving me yes buts, giving me but what ifs, demanding that I produce a crystal ball and tell them exactly how everything will go guaranteed. I can't do that. There are no guarantees in life of anything. There never have been. We have, most of us, spent our lives demanding to be given what those who went before us had to earn, and that's bad karma. Our forefathers, who first came here to this continent and then to the Northwest, never expected any guarantees, and they would be astounded that we do. They trusted in their God, their racial destiny, and their own hearts and minds and souls, and they packed those Conestoga wagons. Now you need to do the same with the U-Haul truck. Well, our time is up for this week. Radio Free Northwest is brought to you every week by the Northwest Front. You can contact us at Post Office Box 4856, Seattle, Washington, or you can go to our website at www.northwestfront.org. Until next week, this is Harold Covington signing off. Sasha Amban. Freedom.